Welcome to Spotlight on Science at the Smithsonian, a bi-weekly podcast from the Smithsonian Institution. I am David Evans, Undersecretary for Science here at the Smithsonian. This is Volume 4, Number 16, released on August 25, 2006. In this installment of Spotlight on Science, we'll look at the work of researchers from the Smithsonian Astrophysical Observatory, who are looking for the best way to identify habitable planets. They argue that identifying planets with infrared emission spectra similar to Earth will yield planets most likely to be habitable. Next, Smithsonian researchers at the Conservation and Research Center are refining a non-invasive technique for studying endangered species. This technique allows researchers to collect information on wild mammals without having to capture or even directly observe them. Finally, Tropical Research Institute scientists look at the effect of the size of hoods, large sand or mud structures built by fiddler crab males, have on attracting females.
Detecting Earth-like planets in space. Although over 150 planets around other stars are now known, none of them appears to be capable of supporting life as we know it. Astronomers want to be certain, however, that they understand what a habitable extrasolar planet would really look like. The optical light and other forms of electromagnetic radiation from planets can be carefully analyzed according to their colors or spectrum. SAO astronomer Kenneth Jux, along with seven colleagues, one a recent SAO astronomer, has asked what the spectrum of a habitable planet might look like. Would its atmosphere or its surface character be measurable, for example? And might it vary with the planet's seasons or rotation? The team of astronomers argues in a new paper in the Astrophysical Journal that the best way to decide if the spectrum of a planet indicates habitability is to compare it to the Earth's spectrum. They further explain that the best way to obtain an accurate measure of the Earth's spectrum, as seen from space, is to measure Earthshine, the faint light seen on the night side of the crescent moon. Earthshine is light reflected from the sunlight-illuminated day side of Earth onto the night side of the moon and back again into telescopes on the night side of Earth. The scientists point out that spectra of Earth taken from satellites are inadequate because they do not include the whole disk of Earth, only small patches, and these are usually only in selected wavelength ranges, not the wide coverage thought to be needed for more certain identification. Building on their previous research efforts, the team studied the faint Earthshine at infrared wavelengths to extend their database, and then modeled the results. The dominant signatures of the new spectra are from water, molecular oxygen, and carbon dioxide, with the weak but key presence of methane gas. They conclude that the simultaneous presence of water, methane, and molecular oxygen in a planet's atmosphere is a strong indicator of biological activity, although they caution that some unusual geological process might also be able to produce this signature. The results are significant because they help to identify some of the most productive indicators of planetary habitability and will help to properly design future missions aimed at finding habitable planets. Smithsonian scientists provide a high-tech method to study endangered species. The conservation and management of endangered species is a primary focus of the National Zoo's research staff, who've pioneered research and veterinary science methods for decades. Now Zoo and National Museum of Natural History scientists and a former Smithsonian pre-doctoral fellowship student are credited with refining a non-invasive technique, fecal sampling, followed by molecular analysis of fecal DNA, to obtain information on wild mammals without the need to capture, handle, or observe them. This method has previously been criticized because, if conducted inappropriately, it yields too many scoring problems and genotyping errors, making the results unreliable. The endangered San Joaquin kit fox, Vulpes macrotus mutica, population in California, which has been studied by the zoo for 17 years, was chosen as the research target. Researchers from the Conservation and Research Center and the Genetics Program joined forces with colleagues from the University of Washington and University of Montana, along with trained locator dogs, to collect hundreds of fecal samples, or scats, in the Carrizo Plain National Monument. The location of each scat collected was georeferenced using a global positioning system, or GPS unit. The team's previous research had shown that the trained dogs were 100% accurate at distinguishing kit fox scats from those of other species. DNA was extracted from every scat sample, and sex markers and sex microsatellite loci were examined. Next, 5 previously recommended tests for reducing and tracking error, as well as several new spatial tests developed by the zoo's investigators, were applied. Results showed very low rates of genotyping error. An analysis of the individual scat genotypes provided information on kit foxes that was in good agreement with data gathered using more traditional, invasive techniques, such as trapping and radio collaring. Results on fox movement patterns, for instance, agreed with prior field observations. An important conclusion of this study is that a systematic collection of fresh scats, followed by molecular typing, can provide reliable data on species, differentiate individuals, and provide data on sex. Genetic data can further reveal relatedness, movements, and latrine use. The technique, with some further testing, may prove useful in deducing the probable diameter of a fox home range, since it was found that 96% of foxes deposited scats within a distance of no greater than 2,107 meters. Finally, researchers foresee fecal sampling, when paired with appropriate steps to ensure genotype reliability, as being quite applicable to studies of other elusive or rare animal populations. Fiddler crabs prove that bigger is not always better. Males of many animal species express their amorous intentions with excessively loud, colorful, or large signals and displays that are designed to attract the attention of potential mates. By demanding extravagance, females are thought to benefit because they'll mate only with fit males, those that can afford a substantial layout in advertising. But a recent study by Smithsonian Tropical Research Institute scientists John H. Christie and Patricia R. Y. Backwell of courtship signaling and female preferences in the tropical fiddler crab Yucca terpsichores has shown that bigger is not always better when it comes to wooing mates. The signal in question is a sand hood, an arching pile of sand that courting male U. terpsichores make on one edge of the opening to their burrow, to which they attract females with a claw-waving display. At least 18 other species of fiddler crabs, of about 97 species worldwide, make courtship structures, but the hoods of U. terpsichores are the largest relative to the size of their builder. Females usually visit a dozen or more males before they choose a mate by staying in a male's burrow, and they strongly prefer to visit males who have a hood at their burrow entrance. While moving between burrows, female crabs are at risk of predation from shorebirds. By running preferentially to burrows with hoods, they reduce the risk because these objects make it easy for females to find the male's burrow in safety. Christie and Backwell recently reported in Animal Behavior on a series of experiments to determine whether bigger hoods are more attractive to females. They replaced natural hoods with supersized hood replicas and found, surprisingly, that females did not prefer to visit males with these exaggerated signals compared to average-size hoods. The researchers suggest that discrimination between average and unusually large hoods would necessarily cause females to hesitate when moving between males' burrows, and that this hesitation might be fatal and prevent the evolution of a preference for ever larger hoods. Still, this does not explain why the hoods of this species are so large. Because they're made of pure sand, hoods crumble easily as they dry, and some even blow away in the wind. Other species make smaller structures of sticky mud, and they seldom fall down. The authors suggest that sand hoods may be unusually large, simply to be durable. That's all for this issue of Spotlight on Science at the Smithsonian. If you haven't already subscribed to the Spotlight podcast, visit spotlight.si.edu to learn how. You can also download archived editions of Spotlight. As always, feel free to share your thoughts with the Spotlight team at spotlight@si.edu.